More from ABC's Hal Walker in Bonn.
It's all over but the deployment. A second day of debate droned toward the inevitable conclusion as the pro-missile government of Chancellor Helmut Kohl controlled a firm majority of the legislators. So confident were American authorities in the decision that steps were underway today to receive and protect the missiles, which are expected to start arriving here in Germany tomorrow. Hal Walker, ABC News, Bonn.
Riot police arrested 98 anti-nuclear protesters in Bonn today, but a spokesman said police did not use their clubs, nor was there any violence or injuries. Yesterday, West German police used billy clubs and water cannon and jailed almost 200 people when demonstrators tried to block a main street near the parliament building. I'll have more after this.
Hi, I'm Jack Clark. Nice to be so good at losing things. I made a career of it. A fine image for an actor, but not a businessman. Now with my Canon personal confidence copier, I never lose anything. It makes clear copies on plain paper, and all I have to do to maintain it is change a cartridge. Canon PC copiers. Even the price makes you look good. Hey, anybody see my glasses? Personal confidence copying.
For more details, see your local Canon PC copier dealer.
This is Merlin Olsen with a new way to add the perfect touch to any Thanksgiving table. The Turkey Basket Bouquet from FTD. An attractive woven basket shaped like a turkey and filled with fall flowers. It makes a perfect holiday centerpiece, and FTD delivers it almost anywhere with special care. The FTD Turkey Basket Bouquet. A beautiful way to send your thoughts to the ones you love, wherever they may be. Remember, only your FTD florist has it.
Saudi Arabia is continuing to work on establishing a ceasefire in the Lebanese city of Tripoli. ABC's Ann Compton says the Saudi foreign minister is now in Damascus and is trying to arrange not only a ceasefire, but the evacuation of Yasser Arafat and his remaining band of supporters. The Saudis successfully worked out the ceasefire in Beirut earlier this year. Actor Michael Conrad, who played Sergeant Phil Esterhaus on Hill Street Blues, has died at the age of 58. Conrad won two Emmys for that role, a fatherly and loquacious deck sergeant. He had been treated for cancer the past 2 years. A snowstorm blamed for 10 deaths in the Rockies is pushing into the Midwest now, and it's going to be a white Thanksgiving in the Great Lakes area if forecasters are correct. The snow has eased in the hard-hit areas of Colorado and Wyoming, where 2 feet of snow on the ground was common, but travel is still hazardous. The Highway Patrol in Cheyenne, Wyoming reports piles of accidents. Over a foot of snow fell in the Nebraska Panhandle, closing several schools. The Educational Testing Service says it will ban the use of its national teacher examination to weed out incompetent teachers. Company President Gregory Onrig said he is concerned about the test being used as a sole condition of employment after the teacher has been on the job. President Reagan leaves Washington tomorrow morning for a Thanksgiving holiday with his family at his California ranch. There are no public events on the president's schedule. The schedule calls for Mr. Reagan to return to Washington on Sunday. New factory orders for durable goods rose a full 3% in the month of October, and that is more good news for the economy. ABC's Tony Sargent has details from Washington.
That's the third straight monthly gain in new orders for durable goods, and the strongest since June. Durables include the mainly big-ticket items made to last 3 years or more, things both consumers and businesses buy. A big jump in aircraft orders last month accounted for much of the gain. For the year through October, new orders for durables rose at a pace of more than 28%. The Commerce Department says the backlog of unfilled orders rose more last month than any time since the recession officially ended almost a year earlier. So some makers of durables have had to step up production to keep pace with unexpectedly strong demand. That helps put people back to work. Tony Sargent, ABC News, Washington.
Very heavy trading on Wall Street today. 117.5 million shares traded hands. The Dow Jones Industrials finished up 7 points. At 1275.81. This is ABC News.
Take it from me, Vincent Price. Good taste is very important. That's why, for me, nothing can compare with real butter. I can think of nothing else that has the same creamy, wonderful taste. And butter does so much for breads, sauces, vegetables, all my creations. I'd never settle for less than real butter, because I can taste the difference. Can't you?
Sponsored by American Dairy Association, we'll never claim butter tastes like margarine.
For the ABC Information Network, I'm Bob Walker.
WXYZ News Talk Time, 5:05. Good evening, I'm Mike O'Neill. They're staying away in droves, staying away from the polls in the first Michigan recall election of the state lawmaker. Oakland County elections officials late today reporting a very light turnout in State Senator Philip Maston's Pontiac area district. Consumers Power Company officials aren't commenting on the class action lawsuit filed in federal court today, a suit claiming the utility withheld information about its Midland nuclear power plant to inflate the value of a stock offering. A 33-year-old Detroit man used head and hand signals at his court appearance today on charges of hijacking a plane yesterday, refusing to talk except to tell the magistrate he would speak in 3 days. He'll stay in jail in the meantime. From the WXYZ Weather Center, partly to mostly cloudy skies, developing overnight, low around 50, then rain tomorrow possibly becoming heavy at times during the afternoon, high 55 to 60. Rain tapering to showers, just a few of them lingering on Thanksgiving. Currently sunny skies, 48 degrees. For Michigan's most honored Radio News team, I'm Mike O'Neill, WXYZ News.
WXYZ, 1270.
Talk Radio, a forum for new thoughts and fresh ideas, a place to learn and an opportunity to express yourself. Get involved with our newsmakers and our newsbreakers of today and tomorrow. Talk Radio invites your participation. Talk Radio is
Michael Jackson.
Hello there, and a good day to you. My name is Michael Jackson, and this is Talk Radio. The date, November 22nd. On this day, exactly 20 years ago, a genuinely popular president, a man widely admired and respected by people of all ages, a man capable of exciting the minds of Americans and foreigners alike, a hero to many, was gunned down by an assassin's bullet. JFK. Do you remember where you were, when you heard, what you felt and thought? JFK, he was a man who understood the power of words and their importance in moving people to assent and action. It was only when he entered the White House and began to deploy the powers and the prestige of the White House that I think his political genius and his intellectual quality became evident. In 2 years and 10 months in office, he captured the imagination of a nation. He mastered the political scene. He became something of a legend. His sudden death precluded his reaching the full range of the accomplishments which, under his leadership, might well have come to fruition. For the next couple of hours, I'd like with you to re-meet some of his cabinet, speak with historians, journalists, and others to learn again, or afresh, about JFK, a man who never stopped growing. Kennedy is of lesser historical size than Lincoln, though their deaths were comparable in the traumatic effect on contemporaries. If Kennedy had lived, no Watergate, and very likely no Vietnam, probably no Johnson, no Nixon in the White House. Where were you when you heard this?
We interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin from ABC Radio. Here is a special bulletin from Dallas, Texas. 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade today in downtown Dallas, Texas. This is ABC Radio.
One of the people who really chronicled that era so well, while it was occurring, a fine reporter, went on to become a great author, is on the line with us. Honored to be able to say welcome to the author of The Best and the Brightest and Much More, David Halberstam.
How are you, Michael? Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you. Well, you say JFK aroused passions pro and con. What did he do with yours?
Well, I think when I said passions pro and con, it was not so much just him, but the fact that he used a theatrical device like television. What I was saying in that article was that traditional politicians had a more functional role when politicians started, as John Kennedy did. He was our first television president. Coming through us through television, it was theatrical, and that creates, in effect, a more emotional and volatile relationship rather than a functional one. On my personal score, he created relatively few emotions. I think I was somewhat outside of his grasp. I've had a very mixed view of him, and I'm neither in the real revisionists or the Kennedy lovers, and that puts me, I suppose, in a very small piece of territory. I think he was a very cool piece of work. There's a great mythology that sprung up about him because he was attractive. He used television well. His acolytes were enormously articulate and wrote extremely skillful books, and because of the manner in which he was killed, and so there was a sense about him of a romantic figure. In fact, John Kennedy was not terribly romantic. He was a very cool piece of work. He eyed the political process very coldly. He measured the odds very carefully. You know, could he win? Could it be pulled off? He was very slow, for example, coming around to civil rights. On probably one of the critical things that his administration did not do, despite the high level of sophistication of it, it did not change the madness of our policy towards China. I mean, I think that was, and he didn't do it for political reasons. He just didn't want to take on the right wing. But on his, to his side, to his credit, he was intelligent, modern, contemporary, and he was, I think, good on the arms race, trying to temper that, trying to turn it around. I think he wanted to create a world of with less emotion and less madness, I mean, between us and the Soviet Union. And I think that was the main attractive part of that administration.
Well, you're speaking about his hopes. Only 1,000 days, did he achieve any of them? Did he set us on the path towards that?
I don't really think so. I mean, that's, yeah. I'm sure there are all kinds of acolytes who would disagree with me, but if you look at what has happened since the Vietnam and Watergate have followed, we are, if anything, I think, regressed in terms of our the arms race. I think the rhetoric is extraordinarily overheated and senseless now, and regrettably, I think a good deal of that is because of the incumbent president, who seemed particularly quick to use escalated rhetoric on something as delicate as arms, and I think who really doesn't believe in arms control. I think we have a president who really doesn't believe in arms control. So it would seem to me that the kind of rationality that John Kennedy believed in fact, did not take root. Maybe had he lived longer, had it been an eight-year term of office instead of 3 years, perhaps it might have been different. Perhaps we're just too volatile a country. I don't know. But I would have to say that really not very much took root in it so far.
A rich man, sort of snobbish, wasn't he? And yet he appealed to the masses.
Well, he was very attractive. He was he looked wonderful. He was wonderfully clothed. He did it, he did television well. His hair was longer. But on the other hand, yes, he was a great snob. He was an Irish Catholic, but he was an Irish Catholic Brahmin, and he had this famous Irish mafia around him, but they didn't make it. I mean, Larry O'Brien didn't much make it, nor did Kenny O'Donnell, to his dinner table. I mean, there was a real moat around that, and Jackie Kennedy was sitting there by the moat, not letting him over.
Yeah.
Whereas I think with his brother Robert, who was, I think, much more egalitarian, a little more egalitarian, more emotional, those who worked for him ate at his table. And that was not true of John Kennedy. I mean, his buddies were people like Charlie Bartlett and Joe Alsop. They were really WASP snobs.
All Rhodes scholars and historians. He liked intellectuals.
He liked the intellectual patina, and he was not unaware of the gloss that it cast upon his administration, that he was getting a lot of points for having. I mean, I don't think that, for instance, Arthur Schlesinger was ever in a very influential role in that administration, but he was influential in articulating the administration against its critics and giving a kind of intellectual legitimacy to Kennedy that Kennedy, I believe, at the beginning of the administration particularly needed. You have to understand that when Kennedy first came into the Democratic spotlight in 1959 and 60, that the liberal intellectual core had an essential loyalty to Adlai Stevenson.
Yes.
And therefore, in winning that core back to Kennedy, people like Schlesinger and Galbraith were very influential.
On that note, could we pause? I'd love to ask a couple questions. We're speaking with the author of, among so many works, The Best and the Brightest, a man who's at work on a book at the moment on American industrial decline. He's David Halberstam. I'm Michael Jackson. This is Talk Radio. We'll continue. Ask the Doctor, afternoons at 4 with Dr. Portner on WXYZ.
Who is it?
I'd like to talk to you about health insurance.
We're already covered.
But this health insurance you eat.
What?
One of the best ways to help ensure good health is to eat a well-balanced diet that includes nutritious foods like Campbell's soup. Campbell's tomato soup, for instance, is an excellent source of vitamin C.
Will you excuse me? See, I have some health insurance on the table, and some of it's getting cold.
Campbell's.
My sister Anne is 3 years older than I am, and we both still look pretty good. Except I have more of those darn brown spots than she does. When she told me she uses Porcelana.
If you have pigmentation brown spots on your skin, nothing will make them disappear overnight. But if you get Porcelana Fade Cream and keep using it, your brown spots will fade.
Both our spots are very faint now, thanks to Porcelana.
Porcelana Fade Cream. It will take time, but your brown spots will fade. Use only as directed.
Birthdays, weddings, and now Christmas. The special occasions keep coming along, and most people are constantly looking for a gift idea that's easy, fun, and different from anything else they've ever sent. This year's really unique hot gift ideas from the International Star Registry. For just $35, you can name a star after anyone you want. You can now give that special person or friend a gift that is so different it can't be topped. Just call 800-282-3333. And the star for the person you chose will be permanently recorded in book form in the Copyright Office of the Library of Congress. With the star comes a beautiful four-color parchment certificate of record suitable for framing, an informative booklet on the stars, plus sky charts showing your star's exact location. Why buy a tie or a serving dish this Christmas when for just $35 you can send the most unusual gift around? It's great for birthdays and all other special occasions. Call the International Star Registry today, 800-282-3333.
Wake up and be well informed tomorrow morning with the Morning News Talk team. I'm Jerry Whitman. Dan Streeter and I are here every weekday morning to fill you in on what's been happening from Metro Detroit to the capitals of the world. You'll get traffic updates from Bob Dustman, the latest weather forecast from Bonnie Cameron, sports with Eli Zarrett, and Olympic updates with ABC's Keith Jackson. That and much more tomorrow, 6 till 10 a.m. Start your Wednesday well informed with Streeter and Whitman on Morning News Talk on AM 1270 WXYZ Detroit.
John Fitzgerald Kennedy, 20 years after he was shot. I look forward shortly to taking your views of the impact it made and where you were when you heard of his death. We're speaking with David Halberstam. I'm Michael Jackson. Does the assassin's bullet change the course of history?
Yeah, I think it does. I think, in fact, not only does an assassin's bullet change the course of history, Michael, but the ongoing threat of assassination. I mean, Gerry Ford shot twice and lived. Reagan shot once and managed to live. The deaths of Bobby Kennedy, Martin King, the crippling of George Wallace. There's a real danger in this that it will, in fact, make people take away their belief in the process, because you will finally not be willing to give your hopes to somebody and to a process if that person is going to be slain. I think it's a very upsetting process. And in this case, I think, you know, there's no telling what John Kennedy could have done with 8 years. And so I think there's no doubt he would have been reelected and reelected handily, had a big margin in his second term. He was a modern, contemporary, rational man of the highest order. I think he was a good, practical politician. I think what I'm trying to say is that I'm trying to move between the extreme critics who blame everything that's happened on him and the loyalists who see him without flaws and particularly romanticize him. He was a very cool piece of work, but he was a good, modern, contemporary politician. And I think he weighed the world pretty accurately, was shrewder than most of the men around him, and had a sense that the world was pluralistic and complicated. And we need that badly now. And so an assassin's bullet, I think, in fact, did change the course of history. I mean, you know, I think he would have been a quite successful president had he, you know, gone the whole distance. But 3 years is a very brief time.
Yeah. You say his presidency was different because he was constantly doing non-political things. But that, of course, turns out to make them immensely political, doesn't it?
Well, if you do them, if you go on television with your wife and handsome young children just walking on the beach, that's not a political thing. But if television covers you and you look attractive and people like you because you look attractive and walk on the beach and you're sort of as much a television star as a working politician, then it becomes a political act. And he was enormously skillful at that. He invented, you know, he in effect invented the idea of the international trip, you know, diplomacy through television's picture postcards. Kennedy was very good at that. It sort of you know, being seen with astronauts, things like that. Using television to build his own platform.
What was important to him?
I think the nuclear arms race really was. I think trying to make an irrational world more rational, starting with the arms race, trying to see our adversaries without mythology, trying to understand our own flaws, trying to make a more balanced world, trying to narrow the gap of flaw in terms of dealing with serious adversaries so that we would not misunderstand them and not and they not misunderstand us, and particularly in the arms race. I think that was important. I think it was really a passion, and I think that that's a very attractive part of him.
So to whom did he listen? Who influenced him?
Well, I think he listened to, one of the things that is attractive, unlike the current president who listens to a terribly narrow spectrum of people. He read a great deal, which is important. I don't think this president reads at all.
Mm-hmm.
He listened to a relatively broad selection of people. He certainly had his advisors, most of whom I, as I wrote in my book, I thought were rather brittle and overrated and not terribly wise.
Yeah.
But I think he summoned a relatively diverse spectrum of opinion, and I think he listened to younger people. I think he was much better at listening to dissenters than most of the presidents we've had. I think he was good at listening to non-mythological advice, better than most.
By the way, with bad advisors in mind, wouldn't that be particularly true when it comes to those he listened to about Vietnam?
Well, I think, you know, he got pulled into Vietnam. I've written a book of about 600 pages,
yes.
And I can't really answer it in a sentence or two, but I think in Vietnam he thought he was doing the least that he could in order to fend off what he thought would be a political crisis. Here he did not want to be accused of being soft on Vietnam. I think he thought he would. I think his advisors were probably more gung-ho than he was. I think he knew at the time of his death that he was on his way to a first-class foreign policy failure, which was one reason he was so angry with my reporting from Saigon at the time. I think he thought he could paper it over, run against Goldwater in 64, win big, and then somehow pull out as quietly as he could.
Is the country... Did we get what we deserved? Are you glad he was president?
Well, I thought he was a certainly attractive and hopeful figure. I never was caught up in the Kennedy mythology the way a lot of my colleagues. I was in Vietnam for a lot of that, so, I mean, I was never in on Camelot. I mean, I was watching friends of mine loaded into body bags when everybody was talking about how sexy the Kennedy years were, and I didn't think they were sexy at all. So there is that part of me that is very much a prisoner of the eye of the beholder. My particular optic is different from most, but I think there was a sense that he was a modern man, a modern figure, that he listened, that he could change, that he could shed myths of the past. And I think that part of him was very attractive. I was glad he was president. I was saddened when he was slain. I would have liked to have seen what a second term would have been. I think it is still a huge and painful wound in the public psyche.
Thank you for sharing that.
Michael, it is always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to listen. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Good day. That's David Halberstam, one of our most distinguished authors and journalists and correspondents, author of The Best and the Brightest. I'm Michael Jackson. This is Talk Radio. We'll continue. Michigan's most honored news team keeps you informed on WXYZ.
This is Rich Fisher. Tonight on Channel 7, 6 o'clock Action News. On the night of October 25th, a single gunshot wound to the chest ended the life of 19-year-old Bob Mowat. Witnesses say he was washing his car, his most prized possession, when two men confronted him. The next day, the car was gone, and Bob was found dead in a field. Tonight, an anonymous witness will tell you how you can help Clinton Township Police find Bob Mowat's murderers. Watch Anonymous Witness on Channel 7, 6 o'clock, Action News.
Hello, Detroit. Talk to me, Larry King, midnight to 5 a.m. Our Peabody Award-winning all-night coast-to-coast get-together. Tonight's special guest, Dr. Ray Klein of the Georgetown Center for Strategic and International Studies. Our subject, American intelligence. How good or how bad is it? Join us with open phones, The Larry King Show. It begins at midnight, and it happens right here at News Talk Radio 1270 WXYZ. Detroit.
J.K. Sales and Toy Town have joined forces this year to bring you the largest selection of toys in Michigan. And listen to this. They've announced that they won't be undersold. They will meet or beat anyone else's price. Just bring in a copy of an ad from a current newspaper within 5 days after it appears, and they will meet the price, anyone's price. To start off the biggest Christmas sale ever, you can buy all trimetry ornaments, wrapping paper, bows, ribbons, and so forth, at half price. Don't wait for after Christmas sales. Buy all train accessories at half price and all train and race sets at 30% off. J.K. Sales and Toy Town absolutely will not be undersold. Toy Town, located in the Bloomfield Town Square at Telegraph and Square Lake Roads. There are two J.K. Sales locations, one at 23425 Van Dyke between 9 and 10 Mile, and another in the Winchester Mall in Rochester at Avon and 23 Mile. Shop now at Toy Town and J.K. Sales for the largest selection of toys, games, dolls, and more.
I'd love to get a job that'll pay me what I'm worth, but nobody's hiring.
Relax, honey. You've got a good job.
Yeah, but I know I could do better.
Right now, Century 21 offices are interviewing, and if you've got the ambition to succeed, we want to meet you.
It's in your hands, Bob.
I know I can do it.
Then there's no limit to what you could earn, and we'll back you all the way.
As part of the Century 21 team, you can get the kind of training that has set the standard for our industry, and you'll be backed by the multi-million dollar advertising campaign that has made the Century 21 name the most successful in real estate.
Nancy, I did it.
Really?
Yeah, my first sale.
I'm so proud.
Making home
the Century 21 is helping renters afford a home of their own. One way is by showing them how to lower their down payment or reduce their monthly payments. So if you want to stop paying rent and start investing in a home of your own, call your nearest Century 21 office today. The office independently owned and operated.
Wake up to the news with Dan Streeter and Jerry Whitman here on WXYZ.
I'm Michael Jackson. We're remembering 20 years later, JFK. Those yet to come to be with us, Dean Rusk, Henry Cabot Lodge, Gore Vidal, Theodore White, we'll try and get to them all, Evelyn Lincoln, his secretary, Pierce Salinger, and you, of course. Where were you? What were you doing, Pete?
I was on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange as a runner. And I didn't know what had happened, except that all the brokers were running around screaming and yelling, and the annunciator board, which is a tremendous board which signals the brokers to let them know that they're wanted by their particular brokerage houses, had just lit up completely.
And the market dropped 30 points or something.
Oh, it went absolutely crazy. What I remember most is we got to go home early that day, which was terrific.
What did you think about on the way home?
Absolute devastation. I could not believe it. I was 19 years old. The Vietnam War was on, and I thought, my God almighty, I'm going to go tomorrow. As it turned out, I went within 6 months.
Welcome home. Thank you, Pete, for sharing that.
Thank you.
But David, what about you? Where were you? What were you doing?
I was in my geography class, and I was 14 years old, and the announcement came over the loudspeaker at first. Everyone immediately broke into tears. As we walked home that afternoon, as kids will do in a group, there was no playing. There was no much talking at all. Just everyone kind of walked home in silence.
Do you remember how you spent the rest of the day?
Yeah, I came home and I was glued to the television set. And it was unreal.
It was unreal.
It really was unreal. Even for a 14-year-old who probably didn't have a total grasp of what this meant. And I don't know. It seems to me that if that was the unraveling of our country, then when his brother was assassinated, that was the final coup for me.
I remember driving home from the studios and when Robert Kennedy was shot. And I remember what went through my mind, Robert Kennedy.
Yes.
I remember when I kept saying, I burst into the house and I said to my wife, those bastards have done it again.
Yeah.
I didn't know who they were, but that was what was going through my mind over and over again.
And I wanted to leave the country, but then I just said, well, now what is that going to prove, you know?
Thanks for sharing that, sir.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Robert, you're on Talk Radio. I'm Michael Jackson. Where were you when you heard?
Yes, Michael. I was in third grade. I was on the playground eating my lunch, and I remember the kids running around yelling, the president's been shot, the president's been shot. And at the time, I don't think I really understood everything, but I felt very scared. And I remember seeing all the teachers crying. And, you know, to me, that was very new. Watching a teacher cry.
As you now know, you're then obviously a man in your late 20s.
Yeah, I'm 28 years old.
Was he a great man, good man?
I consider President Kennedy the first real leader in my lifetime, and now I consider President Reagan the only other leader in my lifetime.
Fascinating. Politically poles apart, same dreams, same goals, same aspirations. Thank you for sharing that.
And thank you.
We'll continue. I'm Michael Jackson. This is Talk Radio.
It's 5:30. Farmer Jack, savings time.
Time to save on U.S. number one southern-grown sweet yams. Just 25 cents a pound. Only at Farmer Jack.
WXYZ Detroit.
From News Talk Radio 1270 WXYZ News, I'm Mike O'Neill. They've given the go-ahead, the West German Parliament capping 2 days of debate with a vote to go ahead with deployment of new U.S. nuclear missiles in West Germany. A lighter-than-expected turnout in voting today in the Pontiac area, balloting in the state's first legislative recall election. Reagan administration says Syria provided help to the group of Iranians who carried out last month's bombing of the U.S. Marine compound in Beirut.
Drivers on the Ruther will get caught in a backup. This Metro Traffic Report brought to you by USA Today. State police have cleared a two-car accident from westbound 696 between DeQuinder and Cousins. However, one of those vehicles is still on the shoulder, as is a police car, and that's causing gawkers to check things out. Slow speeds to 25 back to DeQuinder. And watch out for a stall out westbound Hubbard over the Southfield.
Every day, USA Today Sports brings you all the scores from everywhere, plus state-by-state coverage of pro college and high school, only in USA Today, the nation's newspaper.
For WXYZ News Talk Radio, Bob Dustman, Metro Traffic Control.
From the WXYZ Weather Center, with word of a relatively warm night ahead, meteorologist Ken McKinley.
It will be a warm night, Mike. Temperatures will initially fall into the 40s, I think, through the evening hours, but they'll rise to about 50 by tomorrow morning. Again, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy overnight tonight. And tomorrow, some rain coming into the area. It may become heavy at times later in the day. High temperatures tomorrow, 55 to 60. Rain tapering to showers tomorrow night. Lows about 40 and for Thanksgiving Day. Generally cloudy. Still a few showers in the area with temperatures in the middle 40s. Right now, just a few clouds around, not very many at all, and it's 48 degrees.
Now, Sports Talk, accented by Bush Beer. Here's Eli Zarrett.
Well, it's starting and it will build, and by the time Michigan actually faces Auburn January 2nd in the Sugar Bowl, Michigan fans will be bracing for the worst, because at this rate, the Auburn legend could be frightening. First off, the SEC acts like they invented football, and lots of people believe it. And the stats do show Auburn to be a monster, rated third because they lost to number two Texas early in the season. They've also played the toughest schedule in the nation, faced seven top 20 teams, no Northwesterns on their slate, and have an animal running back in Bo Jackson as they batter you from the wishbone. Last time a Big Ten team played an SEC team, Alabama gave Ohio State a dreadful beating, 35-6 in the 78 Sugar Bowl. Big Auburn advantage. They'll be practicing the next couple of weeks and facing Alabama December 3rd, while Michigan will have only 4 days practice here and 3 days in New Orleans end of December leading up to the game. So expect the Auburn image, justified or not, to grow to the point where people will start fearing for Wolverine lives. Eli Zarrett, WXYZ Sports.
Hoyt Axton here with a word about Busch Beer. It's that time of day when you can't say, come on and head for the mountain. The taste is smooth. The taste is smooth and it's coming your way. Head for the mountain. Head for the mountain. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Wall Street, the Dow average of 30 industrials up 7 points. Heavy trading today, more than 117 million shares.
WXYZ News Talk Time, 5:34. Talk about the news tonight with Kevin Joyce here on WXYZ. We're remembering JFK with many who were close to him, worked with him, knew him, critics of his administration, and of course, with you. I'm Michael Jackson. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Where were you?
Rockwell in Southern California.
What were you doing?
I was in the logistics department. I was the cataloger.
And what happened and how did you hear?
Well, it came over, they announced that Kennedy had been shot over the loudspeaker throughout the whole building. We were working on the Apollo program, the moon program.
Yeah, do you remember how you reacted to it?
I just stopped in my tracks and looked at it. Everyone in the office, and we all just looked at each other and just couldn't believe what we were hearing.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin from ABC Radio.
Here is a special bulletin from Dallas, Texas. Three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade today in downtown Dallas, Texas. This is ABC Radio.
Do you wonder what manner of man Lee Harvey Oswald really was? I suppose the best person to tell us is Lee Harvey Oswald. We have here a rare series of brief recordings that date back to New Orleans in 1963, just prior to the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Mr. Oswald, did you live in the Soviet Union?
The fact that I did live for a time in the Soviet Union,
yes,
gives me excellent qualifications to repudiate charges that Cuba and the Fair Play for Cuba Committee is communist controlled.
Lee Harvey Oswald, how do you feel that the United States has handled the Cuban situation?
I and the Fair Play for Cuba Committee does think that the United States government, through certain agencies, namely the State Department and the CIA, has made monumental mistakes in its relations with Cuba. Mistakes which are pushing Cuba into the sphere of activity of, let's say, a very dogmatic communist country as China is.
Mr. Oswald, would you tell us a little bit more of your understanding of the way in which the United States regards Fidel Castro?
I would say that the activities of the United States government in regard to Batista were a manifestation of not so much support for Fidel Castro, but rather a withdrawal of support from Batista. In other words, we stopped armaments to Batista. What we should have done was to take those armaments and drop them into the Sierra Maestra, where Fidel Castro could have used them. As for public sentiment at that time, I think even at that time, even before the revolution, there were rumblings of official comment and so forth from government officials against Fidel Castro.
That was the voice of destiny of Lee Harvey Oswald, a man who altered history, perhaps the destiny of mankind, by that pulling of the trigger, squeezing of the trigger. And who knows, but the very germ of the idea, the concept, the thought to assassinate President Kennedy just might have been spawned during the course of that interview or some similar interview you've just heard. That was recorded in 1963, a short while prior to his assassination of President John F. Kennedy. That was really digging back into my archives. Alex, dig back into yours. How old were you and where were you?
Michael, I was 5 years old. I was in Mission Hills, California, and I had my family had just come over from South America, Colombia, as a matter of fact. My father was a black Latin American, and so we had felt a real kinship toward Kennedy at that time. It had been developing, and in fact, even though I was small, I remember distinctly my mother was helping me with some books on reading. I was learning how to read at the time. And my dad rushed in with a look that I'd never seen on his face, and he said, "They have killed the president." And we turned on the television, and there was one image that I will never forget. And you know, I'm only 25 years old, and it was the scene at the hospital, the cameras outside the hospital. And you got to understand that as a family, we were just becoming, we were just starting to really believe in the American dream. You know, my father had come over. We had some means in South America, but he had was working on his PhD, and we were had our own home, and you know, we were just starting to believe in all these things. And that followed with Robert's killing and then Martin Luther King's. I'm getting all emotional about it, even though I was only 5 years old, but I remember that very clearly.
Yeah.
Very clearly.
And you probably would remember this.
All this will not be finished in the first 100 days. Nor will it be finished in the first 1,000 days, nor in the life of this administration, nor even perhaps in our lifetime on this planet. But let us begin. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Ruth, does that still give you chills?
Yes, it certainly does. And can I tell you why? It was a doubly sad day for me. I was at work, working on the switchboard as a relief operator while people were out to lunch.
In Pittsburgh then, too?
In Pittsburgh, right. And my mother called me on the switchboard to tell me that Kennedy had died. And I was devastated. But what makes it worse, she died shortly after. And, you know, when you mentioned that hour that happened today, yeah, it brought this all back, her voice, and, you know, coming to me, telling me this. And it was doubly sad for me.
I'm sure, Ruth. Thank you very much for sharing
that.
I'm Michael Jackson. This is News Talk Radio, AM 1270, WXYZ.
Hey, I know you.
You've probably seen me on TV.
That's it. You're the guy in those Canon personal cartridge copier commercials.
Yeah, but that's not what I meant.
Those Canon PC copiers, they're great little machines, you know?
I know.
Canon PC copiers, they're perfect for my little business. They make beautiful copies on plain paper, and those replaceable cartridges make the copier practically maintenance-free. I like the different color cartridges, too. Canon PC copiers are so affordable, I'd have to be crazy not to have one in my office.
That's true.
You know, you're so convincing in those commercials. You ever thought about becoming an actor?
Well, as a matter of fact,
I... You know, you probably could with a little help.
Look, I don't think you understand...
What's your name, anyway?
Jack Klugman.
Oh, boy, first thing you gotta do is change that name.
Personal cartridge copying.
For more details, see your local Canon PC copier dealer.
My boyfriend doesn't complain much, but he did mention that smoking was staining my teeth yellow and spoiling my smile. But I really prefer a gel toothpaste. So when Topol came out with a gel, I tried it.
Like regular Topol, new Topol Smoker's Gel brightens smoker's teeth, and it helps remove ugly yellow tobacco stains.
Now he tells me every day how bright and beautiful my smile is, and I love the taste of Topol Gel. It really wakes up my mouth.
For yellow tobacco-stained teeth, try new Topol Smoker's Gel.
When you're a plumber, you bend over a lot. Sometimes it really makes those lower back muscles ache. So I bought Doane's Backache Spray, and it's great, especially since I live alone. No more twisting and straining to rub in ointment for me.
New Doane's Backache Spray for minor pain of simple muscular backache. Its penetrating action helps bring you soothing, warm relief that lasts for hours.
Sure makes my back feel better.
Doane's Backache Spray. Use only as directed.
A delicious cabbage soup. That's what we're going to do tomorrow. Hello, Detroit. This is Dr. Leonard Portner, and I can't wait to teach you how to make that. We'll also answer all your questions about medicine and health, relaxation techniques, exercise, nutrition, and any other topics that can help make you feel better. So talk to me, Dr. Leonard Portner, tomorrow, 4 to 5 p.m. on News Talk Radio AM 1270, WXYZ, Detroit.
This is Talk Radio. I'm Michael Jackson. We speak today of the memory of the times of John F. Kennedy. Yes, Rod, where were you?
I was at Parris Island. I was...
Boot camp?
Boot camp.
Marine?
Marine. I was just a few days away from graduation from boot camp. And our platoon with others was on the parade ground rehearsing for what's called the final field, which is really the final inspection. And we were standing at parade rest, and announcement came over the loudspeaker. Our commander-in-chief, President Kennedy, has been shot and killed in Dallas security of barracks. There was nothing like it because from the time I was 16, when he was running for office and elected, I mean, he was my man. And, you know, he still is. Our tragedy, in addition to the assassination itself, is... We were not allowed to read newspapers at any time, including that time. We had no TV, we had no radio, no magazines, nothing. All we knew is what we were told. And I remember our drill instructor, our main drill instructor, Staff Sergeant McFadden, you know, he had tears in his eyes. He wasn't crying because he wouldn't be allowed to do that. He was, you know, a Marine like the rest of us. But he was sad, and he would report to us daily the changing events and what was happening. But it was, to me, it's still unfinished business because... Because I wasn't there. You know, I was there and I wasn't there.
But we were all there when this happened.
Mrs. Kennedy. The President's brother, Robert, the Attorney General, Senator Ted Kennedy, are now walked to the head of the grave. Alaska trip.
Just like yesterday. Gene, you're on Talk Radio. I'm Michael Jackson. Hello.
Yeah, you're right. It does remind me of yesterday.
Where were you?
I was in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yeah. Doing what?
I had gotten kicked out of school. The man said be concise, so I will. I was a new father, a senior in high school.
Wow.
And I was on my way back home.
On a bus?
On the bus, on a city bus. And evidently the bus driver had heard something, because he stopped just about a block and a half before my stop, and he cried. And he turned his radio on so that everyone could hear it. And it didn't hit me until I was living at my mother's house at the time. And it didn't really hit me until I went home, and she was in the kitchen, and she was crying.
Yeah.
It saddened me. It still does.
Let's see if we can add a different note, though. Thank you very much for that.
Well,
thank you for sharing it. A different note. Evelyn Lincoln was secretary to John F. Kennedy. Miss Lincoln, you've heard what's been going on here. What do you think of when you think of the time that you spent with President Kennedy?
Well, I think of the very fortunate time I had to be associated with them. I think it was one of the most exciting periods of my whole life. And what he brought to the American people. I think he was an outstanding man. And, you know, there are 30 million people living today who were not old enough or even born 20 years ago who knew nothing of that era. And I feel very sorry that they were not able to live during that time.
Well, let's imagine I'm one of them for a moment. What did I miss? What manner of man, what did he bring to the United States?
Well, what he brought to the United States was that he tried to keep everyone, he tried to do the very best that he could. And he brought to the American people the hope for a better world whereby we could live in peace, not peace by strength, but peace by words and negotiation. He brought an infectious vitality to government and politics. He also made people feel that each one of them had an important role in life. And his greatest legacy was the inspiration he gave to the youth to strive for excellence and have a part in a zeal for achievement.
Hard worker?
Very much. He was a very demanding boss. He spoke rapidly and to the point. He knew exactly what he wanted, expected you to get what he said the first time, and to do it as soon as possible. Also, to do the best of your ability. He had a temper, but after he had blown up, he had forgotten all about it in a very short time.
What do you feel, upon reflection, was or is his major contribution, aside from inspiration?
Well, I think the fact that he was such an honest man and that he tried to do everything by reason and negotiation, he tried to compromise and also he tried to bring about the best for everyone, that there were equal rights for everyone. He did change, and in so doing, he hurt many people's ideas, and therefore they didn't like him. And they went against him for that one reason, because people like status quo. They don't like change. But he did, and he wanted to help every individual to have equality in this world.
Where were you when he was killed?
I was in Dallas.
God, what did you do?
What did I do? Well, what did you do when a big building falls on you, and all of a sudden your whole life is gone? Everything that you've been working for is just in a fraction of 2-3 minutes, it disappears. It's a traumatic feeling. I'll tell you that.
Do you think of yourself, or do you think of, or can you put it that way? Do you pain for the Kennedys, or honestly, do you think first of your own plight?
Oh, I don't think so. I think you think of yourself naturally. But no, I think, what I really think is that I feel sorry for the American people to have lost the man who was so dedicated and who was devoted to do the right thing for everyone. I think they really lost when he was assassinated.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Thank you for being part of our remembering.
Thank you.
Good day, ma'am. The personal secretary to the late John F. Kennedy, Evelyn Lincoln. I'm Michael Jackson. This is Talk Radio. We'll continue. Michigan's award-winning news team keeps you informed mornings on WXYZ.
Not so many years ago, there was a little computer store called Computer Mart that did things a little bit differently. For example, in the early days when most computer people spoke computer talk, these people spoke people talk. Better yet, they actually taught people how to use computers. They offered a wide variety of equipment and software, and they were chosen to represent some of the most important lines in the business, IBM, Digital, NEC, and Apple. Of course, the little store grew. They added another store and another and so on across the state until they grew so successful they needed a new name to go across the nation. They chose Intercomp Computer Centers. And to celebrate, they're having a grand, grand opening with special packages and prices. And you're invited.
Register to win a $5,000 computer system at any Metro Detroit Intercomp Computer Center. No purchase necessary. The Intercomp Computer Center in Ann Arbor is at 2711 Plymouth Road in the Plymouth Road Mall.
Relive the golden age of radio with the WXYZ Radio Theater each weeknight at 11. Monday nights. The Green Hornet fights to restore law and order, followed by Fibber McGee and Molly and all the laughs. Then Tuesday night, solve the crime with Dragnet and laugh along with Red Skelton. Wednesday nights, it's the mystery of the Whistler, followed by that hilarious comedy, The Great Gildersleeve. Then on Thursday nights, behind the squeaky door, go into the inner sanctum. And then just try to sing along with the hilarious Jack Benny. And on Friday nights, hang on for suspense. And then hang on to your funny bone with George Burns and Gracie Allen. Your seat is reserved for you at AM 1270. Curtain time each weeknight, 11 p.m. The place, the WXYZ Radio Theater. WXYZ, Detroit.
You'll make somebody's Christmas when your love arrives in time. It isn't really Christmas until your love arrives. You let them know you care.
At the Postal Service, we know how important it is that your cards and packages reach your loved ones in time for Christmas.
Make somebody's Christmas. Make sure your love arrives in time.
Make sure your cards and packages arrive in time. Please mail early this Christmas.
So make somebody's Christmas. Make sure your love arrives in time.
A public service message from your postal service.
WXYZ News Talk Time, 5:53. Wake up to the news, sports, and weather with Morning News Talk on WXYZ. Our subject, remembering John Kennedy, Jack Kennedy, 20 years ago today, slain by the assassin's bullet. I'm Michael Jackson. Where were you, Diane?
Well, Michael, I was at school in Canada.
Uh-huh.
I was in eighth grade, and one of the girls had taken some papers to the office, and she came just across the hall, and she came running back to the room, and the principal had the radio on, and the CBC had picked it up, and they had, you know, broken in and read the news on the air, and she came running back across the hall, and she said, President Kennedy has been killed. And, you know, we just stopped. It was just unbelievable. We could not believe it.
Appreciate your sharing that. Thank you very much indeed. Richard, how about you?
Well, it was a heck of a day, I'll tell you. Michael, I was in my first job. I was 19 years old.
What were you doing?
I worked as a parts person for a Cadillac concern. And I went upstairs where the guy used to polish the Cadillacs every day, and I used to sit in the Cadillac and have lunch. Yeah. And this one particular day, I turned the radio on, and it sounded like broadcasts of, like, assassination of somebody like McKinley or somebody years ago. They were dramatizing it, and I started listening to it thinking it was very amusing at first.
Yeah.
And then it hit that it wasn't something from the past. It wasn't an assassination from the past, but this actually was happening in Dallas because I knew the president was going to be there. And I'll tell you, the whole place, it was a place where about 40 people worked. It was a small concern, and everybody just gathered around downstairs. The whole place shut down. Every business in the city shut down. When I went home, we went home early that day, and everybody, the streets were empty. It was really, you knew that a great man was taken from us.
And of course, you know, just as it gradually dawned on you, so it only gradually dawned on the news media.
We interrupt this program for another bulletin from ABC Radio. More on the shots fired at President Kennedy's motorcade today in downtown Dallas. No casualties have been reported in the first bulletin. However, there is a later bulletin that says there is perhaps a serious injury. The incident occurred near the county sheriff's office on Main Street, just east of an underpass leading toward the trademark where the president was to make an address. Here is some more information that is just coming in. This is from the Associated Press. It says President Kennedy was shot today just as his motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed Mr. Kennedy. She cried, "Oh no." The motorcade then sped on. And from the United Press, President Kennedy and Governor John Connally of Texas were cut down by an assassin's bullet.
Don, do you remember that?
I certainly do, although that was later in the day. I was in a classroom, and the principal of the school came in and told the teacher, and we dismissed school, and it was just a feeling of impending gloom and doom and something that little schoolboys couldn't quite grasp the enormity of the situation.
What grade were you in?
I was in sixth grade.
Wow. I've got so much more for you to hear. We've got Theodore White and Gore Vidal and Dean Rusk and Arthur Schlesinger. Stay with us if you can. A tribute to the memory of JFK. This is WXYZ News Talk Radio, AM 1270.
Metro Traffic Report is brought to you by the Detroit News. Heading home on the southbound Southfield, you'll find speeds down to around 25 miles per hour. That's in the stretch from 7 Mile to Joy Road. Northbound Lodge still slow to 45 from Davis into Wyoming. However, westbound 696, that backup we had due to an accident has cleared up, and speeds are back up to 45 between Van Dyke and the Chrysler. Bob Dustman, Metro Traffic Control, follow winning streaks, broken records, and power plays. Great moments in sports are brought to you every day in the Detroit News. For home delivery, call 222-2600.
McKinley in the WXYZ Weather Center. A partly to mostly cloudy night coming up tonight across Metro Detroit, with temperatures dropping off into the 40s this evening, but later tonight rising, and it'll be about 50 by tomorrow morning. Tomorrow, rain developing, and it may become heavy at times during the day. High temperatures tomorrow, 55 to 60. Rain tapering to showers tomorrow night. Lows about 40 and a cloudy Thursday coming up. Still a few showers in the area on Thanksgiving Day, with high temperatures in the mid-40s. Right now, generally clear and 48.
Great car, Mike.
Thanks, Linda.
Oh, where did you get it?
How long for?
You know, the other day I went into a dealership to trade in my car. Now, the price was okay, but when it was time to write up the sale, do you know they wanted to charge me sales tax on the full price?
No.
Well, it doesn't seem right to me.
No.
I tell you, there ought to be a law.
As of January 1st, there will be.
What do you mean?
The new sales tax law says you'll pay tax only on the difference between the trade-in value and your new car price.
Well, that sounds great, but I'm ready to buy now.
In that case, see Al Long Ford. Starting now, he's ready with a great trade-in deal, including a sales tax rebate check for you today.
You mean I get cash back?
That's right. Oh. Buy a car or truck, new or used, from Al Long Ford now and pay the same low sales tax you pay in 84.
But wait, let me get this straight.
Sure.
I can get a great trade-in price on my car,
right,
select a new car from Ford's Finance,
right,
and get cash back equal to the 1984 lower sales tax now?
That's right.
Only at Al Long Ford?
You got it.
Okay, then just one more question.
Sure.
Where is Al Long Ford?
East 8 Mile Road, just west of Gratiot.
Okie doke.
Al Long Ford, where next year's tax law is working for you today.
You're in touch with so much on radio, WXYZ.
WXYZ, Detroit.
Hi,
Hi, Kevin Joyce here. This evening, Jack Ruby's attorney, Alan Adelson, and Jack Ruby's brother, Earl, join us as the Kennedy era is revisited on this day of memorial. The Kennedy special, Jack Ruby's brother, Earl, and attorney Alan Adelson and me, Kevin Joyce, 20 years after assassination. Tonight, 7 to 11, over AM 1270, WXYZ Detroit.
From ABC News, I'm Bob Walker.
I believe that those who seek peace and justice, those who join the forward march of the human pilgrimage on Earth, will say of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, he has never left us and he never will.
Senator Edward Kennedy delivering a tribute to his brother at a special mass at the Holy Trinity Church in Washington on this, the 20th anniversary of President Kennedy's assassination. President Reagan and hundreds of other mourners attended. A special memorial service was also held today in Boston, and ABC's Pat Romano was there.
Here at the John Fitzgerald Kennedy Presidential Library in Boston on this November 22nd, the 35th President of the United States, a native son of Massachusetts, being remembered in a special way, a concert by the Harvard University Choir and Orchestra. President Kennedy, who called Harvard his alma mater, hoped one day to have his presidential library located near Harvard University in Cambridge. However, over the years, because of a number of problems, it was eventually built here along the waters of Dorchester Bay, next to the Boston campus of the University of Massachusetts. Pat Romano, ABC News, Boston.
And I'll have more after this.
Never let it be said that Vincent Price doesn't appreciate the finer things in life, like real butter. To me, cooking is a very fine art, and my creations deserve the finest, most natural ingredients, like creamy, delicious butter. I find nothing brings out the flavor of good cooking better than butter. Margarine tastes like butter? Really, I can taste the difference, can't you?
Sponsored by American Dairy Association, we'll never claim butter tastes like margarine.
Digel tops plain antacids. We proved it in recent laboratory tests. We actually cut the yellow top off a Digel tablet to dramatize the results. Without this yellow layer, Digel consumes as much heartburn-producing acid as plain antacids like Rolaids. What's more, Digel has the yellow top and gives you the fast, gas-calming action of simethicone. Conclusion, when you want more than plain relief, Digel tops plain antacids for occasional use only as directed. Digel in tamper-resistant packaging.
UN Secretary General Pérez de Cuellar today appealed to the United States and the Soviet Union not to break off disarmament talks. In a statement after the West German parliament voted to deploy new U.S. nuclear missiles, Pérez de Cuellar said he is profoundly concerned that the Geneva talks might be at the point of failure. The White House, it appears, would not be too surprised if the Soviets left those talks, at least for a while. ABC's Ann Compton reports.
The White House may be breathing a sigh of relief. The Bundestag vote was expected to authorize delivery of new cruise missiles as early as tomorrow, but any degree of uncertainty was unsettling. The next hurdle comes not on the airfields where the new missiles will arrive, but at the negotiating table in Geneva. The Soviets promised last week that they would stay at the talks at least until the West German vote. Now, speculation is rising that the deployment will give them a reason to walk out of the talks in protest, even briefly. When asked if that might happen, President Reagan told reporters here he does not think the Soviets will leave. Then he added, not permanently if they do. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
The Navy says it's launched a crackdown on spare parts buying. The action comes after the Navy paid $1,800 for a $60 rubber and cardboard bombardier scope. Other parts included a $381 rubber nose fairing for a torpedo, now going for $7.50, and a screwdriver used to adjust gyroscopes that had sold for $780, but now is being bought for less than $45. Dead at 58, actor Michael Conrad. Conrad won two Emmys for his portrayal of Sergeant Phil Esterhaus on the TV hit series Hill Street Blues. Conrad had been treated for cancer during the past 2 years. Wall Street continued its upward advance today, the Dow closing 7 points on the plus side, finishing the day at 1275.81. Very heavy trading, 117,550,000 shares, the average price per share up 18 cents. This is ABC News.
One long-distance company thinks serving a town of 20 people is just as important as serving a city of 2 million. That's why AT&T lets you call from Goose Creek, South Carolina to St. Louis, Missouri. From Blessing, Texas to Lodgepole, South Dakota. From Caliente, California to Plainview, Nebraska or Bower Bank, Maine. Calling from anywhere to anywhere. That's AT&T. The more you hear, the better we sound.
For the ABC Information Network, I'm Bob Walker.
WXYZDU Talk Time, 6:05. Good evening, I'm Mike O'Neill. The pace increased a bit late today, but light is still the term to describe the balloting in the state's first legislative recall election. It appears right now that only about one of every five registered voters in State Senator Phil Mastin's district will go to the polls before they close at 8 this evening. Jurors in the Vista disposal case have wrapped up their first full day of deliberations, no verdict yet. Loretta Rupe says she will stay on as Peace Corps director rather than launch a campaign to be the Republican Senate candidate from Michigan. Chrysler will test investors' reaction to its turnaround, planning its first public offering of securities in a half dozen years. From the WXYZ Weather Center, partly to mostly cloudy skies developing overnight, low around 50. Then look for rain to develop tomorrow, possibly becoming heavy at times during the afternoon, high 55 to 60. Rain tapering to showers tomorrow night for Thanksgiving. Cloudy, a few lingering showers, cooler. By the mid-40s. Right now, partly cloudy skies over Detroit, 46 degrees. For Michigan's most honored radio news team, I'm Mike O'Neill, WXYZ News.
WXYZ, Detroit.
Another hour of revisiting, living again the time of President Kennedy. We've met some fascinating people, heard your views. We'll hear again this hour Theodore Wyden, Henry Cabot Lodge, and Gore Vidal, and Dean Roskin in a moment, Pierre Salinger. But where were you when you heard of the killing of the president? I want to take just a couple of minutes, though, with Pierre Salinger, because I know today is an incredibly busy one for him. Former press secretary, ABC bureau chief, could you describe the spirit with which the Kennedy team took office?
Well, I think there were great expectations, great excitement. It was the youngest team. People who came to the White House in a long time. I think the average age was a little under 40 years old. Most of the people involved having fought in World War II, and all with a tremendous ambition to do something for their country, which was galvanized by the personality and by the political skills of John Kennedy himself.
I mean, they were youth and brains, and they promised progress, and by comparison to the departing administration, I mean, their failures in foreign policy, they had everything going for them as they came in, didn't they?
Well, I think that there was not only expectation on the part of those who went to work at the White House on January 20th, 1961, but there was also expectation in the country. There was a feeling that we were moving into a new era. And in a way, I believe that we did move into that new era during the too brief presidency of John Kennedy. I think that for the first time in a long time in American history, there was a sense of involvement of the American people in the actions of their government. There was a rapport between the government and the people during that period. There was a spirit of hope. And I think that that's one of the reasons why 20 years later, John Kennedy's memory still burns quite brightly in the minds and hearts of a lot of people.
So when a man seeks the presidency, he has to devote, I suppose, practically all of his time for a couple of years and all his energy before the nomination and the election to campaigning and basically domestic issues. If that's an accurate assessment, it ill prepares any administration for the foreign policy it has to face and make the moment it gets into office.
Well, first, let me address myself to your question by saying that, while our presidential campaigns are long, they do have one advantage. That is that everybody who runs for the presidency is essentially a local or regional personality at the time he starts to run. And the campaign and the fact that he has to go all over the country to deal with different kinds of groups, to see different kinds of life in America, is a powerful education for a man who's going to become president about what his country's all about. So I don't think we should denigrate that particular aspect of presidential politics. But I think you are right that because of the overpowering concerns most Americans have about domestic policy, a presidential candidate does not address the foreign policy issues with the same attention. However, let it be said that in the case of John Kennedy, after he won the Democratic nomination in Los Angeles in 1960, he created a group of task forces led by some of America's most experienced people to prepare reports, suggestions, ideas on many, many different phases of American foreign policy.
Just a thought, sir. Speaking of politics, what was it that got more voters to turn out in 1960 than in any subsequent presidential election?
Well, I think, first of all, it was an exciting campaign. Second, I think that there was a... you were presented with a real choice. I think that the voters in 1960 were faced with two different choices and did not have the impression that whichever one was elected, it would be the same thing. And third, and I think maybe this may be the major factor, the four television debates between John Kennedy and Richard Nixon, which attracted audiences of close to 100 million people, obviously engaged the country in the electoral process in a way that has not happened since.
Must have been a powerfully charming man because, and this is not meant as a put-down, but I think a statement of fact, his 14 years on Capitol Hill, during that time, I don't think he originated much in the way of important legislation. I've been searching. I can't find any.
He was active in the field of labor legislation, social legislation. He was a very active member of the Labor Committee of the Senate. Also participated in the Senate Labor Rackets Committee, which was a select committee, as you'll recall.
Yes.
He made two or three extremely important speeches on foreign policy, one having to do with Indochina, another having to do with Algeria. So he was not absent from the scene, but I'd say it would be an accurate statement to say that he was not an originator of a great deal of legislation.
But by 1960, he had emerged as really a master of electoral politics, hadn't he?
Well, I think that the real step up to his campaign came in 1956. I mean, I think the fact that he missed out by a couple of votes of getting the vice presidential nomination at the Chicago Convention in 56 may have been the detonator that sent him off on a national orbit towards being president. He was a very engaging figure at that convention. That was his first real introduction on a national scale to the American people, and I think it played a role in what happened subsequently.
He was faced by so many, this young president, so many trials and tribulations and humiliations once in office. How did he manage to preserve that outward composure, and was there inward composure?
Well, first of all, he was a man who was comfortable in his job. he also did not take himself overly seriously.
Yeah.
He had a wonderful sense of humor, which was often directed at himself, and he was comfortable in the job, and that way he was able to bounce off some of the tragic events that took place during his presidency, and some of which in which he was involved.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Thank you so much for being with us on so many occasions, sir.
Okay, Michael.
Good day.
Bye.
That's ABC's Per Salinger, former press secretary to the late JFK. I'm Michael Jackson. This is Talk Radio. This is Detroit's Talk to Me station, WXYZ AM 1270.
Good complexion tips from the Cuticura skincare specialists.
Hello?
My complexion is part dry and part oily, especially by my nose.
That's combination skin. Try Cuticura medicated soap.
Cuticura?
Cuticura is formulated with cleansers to penetrate beneath dirt and grime to lift out excess oil, with an antibacterial ingredient and with conditioners designed to help dry patches feel soft and smooth.
I'll try Cuticura.
Want a fresh, beautiful complexion? Cuticura medicated soap can help combination skin. Use only as directed.
My teeth had gotten so stained from smoking, I finally bought Topol. Topol's kind of expensive compared to regular toothpaste, but compared to what I spend on cigarettes...
Topol Smoker's Tooth Polish, a combination of polishing agents and a rich foaming cleanser, is specially formulated to help remove ugly yellow tobacco stains. Yet laboratory research has proven Topol cleans gently enough to be used every day instead of regular toothpaste.
Thanks to Topol, my teeth are clean and bright now. Topol really works. See?
Topol Smoker's Tooth Polish.
Is there someone on your Christmas, holiday, or birthday gift list that has you stumped? When nothing short of the ultimate gift will do, then why not name a star after them? That's right, a real star. Just call the International Star Registry, 800-282-3333. And for $35, they'll name a star after anyone on your list. The star name for the person you chose will be permanently recorded in book form in the Copyright Office of the Library of Congress and registered in the private Swiss vaults. They'll send you a beautiful parchment certificate of record, perfect for framing, a booklet on the stars,
plus sky charts showing your star's exact location. It's the perfect gift for the person who already has everything. Or for that wealthy relative whose fortune you'd like to share someday. There's certainly no more unique or lasting gift on the market today. For Christmas, birthdays, or special occasions, it's yours for just $35. To order your star, call International Star Registry, 800-282-3333.
Hello, this is Dr. Sonia Friedman, and on Wednesday, we'll talk about how you can negotiate anything. Wouldn't that be terrific? We'll talk about that and lots more between 2 and 4 right here, News Talk Radio 1270, WXYZ, Detroit.
With Michael Jackson, here on Talk Radio.
Thank you. Funny, most of us can't conjure up what it was we were doing last week at this time, but if I ask you again to remember, to think back 20 years, if you were here, I'll wager you remember what you were doing on this very date. Where were you? What do you remember? Okay, Gore Vidal, you were very close to the family. You thought about them a great deal. You knew them very well. Did you think of President Kennedy as friend or foe?
I remember him certainly as one of the most enchanting people I've ever known. Wildly funny. So funny, in fact, that I probably cannot get away on the air with any of his wit, which sometimes is a bit scabrous.
Oh, really?
Terribly funny about everybody, including himself. And one misses his company tremendously. On the other hand, to be absolutely just as the recording angel, which one tries to be, as a commentator, I'd have to say that the presidency was lackluster at best, and even more so, there's a rather dangerous element that in 33 months as president, he began with an invasion of Cuba that failed, and ended by heating up the Vietnam War by sending in, I think it was 20,000 participating advisors with guns. And he was very gung-ho about that war in Southeast Asia. And domestically, he did practically nothing at all. So if you look at the administration, it was not a success. However, people need legends, they need myths, and he certainly is one of the most intelligent men ever to hold that office.
Well, with comments like those, then, don't they help to shatter a myth?
Well, I don't know. I don't think we do. People go on thinking what they want to think. They just remember he was this beautiful, witty creature who had a horrible death, and that is really about all that's remembered of him. So it is probably better to have the myth than to be bothered with the reality of a man who just simply was very disappointing as a president.
You knew him well. Were you close friends?
Well, yes. We had known each other for, my gosh, since 1939, I guess. And slightly, and then after Jackie married him, I saw a good bit of him. And he was the least pompous of political men. I was brought up in politics, of a political family, and most politicians, particularly those who become president or think they are presidential, really, after a while, begin to think of themselves in the third person. I mean, you know, when you saw Eisenhower, when he turned that beautiful smile off, He thought of himself as a national treasure. I mean, when Eisenhower came into a room, he felt that the whole world should be grateful that he had been born. Kennedy always found himself, was always made fun of himself, and I think was rather startled that he was suddenly the president. And he had a very deflationary style, ironic. He was a very civilized man, which most of our politicians are not.
Knowing him that well, knowing the family that well, was the aim to get one of them to become president from a very early age?
Well, so I gather that old Joe was the most ambitious man and rather a bad egg who made up his mind that the Kennedys were going to be first and they were going to make up for all the snobism in Boston against the Irish, which Joe Kennedy was old enough to remember when there used to be signs up, Irish need not apply for jobs. So he had a big chip on his shoulder. And he brought the children up to be very competitive. I remember my father, he decided he'd give each of his children $1 million around 1939. I remember my father was in Roosevelt's administration with Joe Kennedy. And if father said, you know, that's a dumb thing to do, to give these kids $1 million apiece. I mean, you know, suppose that they'll just become shiftless, was my father's rather normal American view. And Joe Kennedy said, no, they won't. They haven't been brought up that way. They've been brought up to be very competitive. And he said, after all, he said, giving them $1 million now is a lot better than having them sit around waiting for me to die, which is a very unpleasant way to spend your old age. So he's a good psychologist.
What's the nicest thing you can say about JFK?
Well, I think I've already said it, that he was not pompous, that he was very intelligent, and he made me laugh more than anybody, with the possible exception of Richard Nixon inadvertently, who also makes me laugh. Kennedy made you laugh with him, not at him.
As General de Gaulle occasionally acknowledges, America to be the daughter of Europe, so I am pleased to come to Yale, the daughter of Harvard. It might be said now that I have the best of both worlds, a Harvard education and a Yale degree.
I'm Michael Jackson. This is News Talk Radio, AM 1270. This is WXYZ.
Is your car trying to tell you something? This is the sound of cooling system trouble. It could need a minor belt adjustment or hose replacement, but left unattended, it will result in expensive engine repair. The specialists at the Radiator Hospital can help you protect one of your most costly investments, your car and its cooling, heating, and air conditioning system. A regular system maintenance check every fall and spring at the Radiator Hospital can help you prolong the life of your car or truck. Before the cold weather sets in, the Radiator Hospital experts will completely winterize your car, including power flush and fill, at a price that's guaranteed to keep you smiling, even in the worst of weather. Remember to see the specialist at the Radiator Hospital for your cooling, heating, and air conditioning system service. Near you in Farmington, in Berkeley, in Detroit, around Van Dyke and Sterling Heights, and our newest location, in Westland on Ford Road, a quarter mile east of the I-275 freeway.
Mention WXYZ, get $5 off a complete winterizing.
You need to save today. You need to find a way. You need all the Revco you can get.
Everyone with diabetes who uses insulin will now find life a little easier, because today, Revco has the new BD Microfine 111 needle, the thinnest, finest, sharpest needle you can buy. And BD Microfine 111 needles are available only on BD low-dose 1/2 cc insulin syringes and BD Plastipak 1 cc insulin syringes. For the best diabetes care, there's BD alcohol swabs. Being better has made the economical Becton Dickinson Microfine 111 needle and BD alcohol swabs the number one choices for better diabetes care. These quality Becton Dickinson products are available now at your nearby Revco discount drug center.
The death of a president. Relive those four unforgettable days from November 1963.
Here is a special bulletin from Dallas, Texas. Three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade today in downtown Dallas, Texas.
Three shots from a mail order catalog, and Camelot is over.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, is dead. The president is dead. Let us pray.
The mournful tolling of a church bell signifying the return of the president in the casket draped with the American flag back to the White House.
Hear Death of a President tonight at 7 p.m. exclusively on News Talk Radio AM 1270, WXYZ, Detroit.
WXYZ News Talk time, 6:25. News Talk Radio for Detroit, WXYZ AM 1270. And I think we're getting an entirely different view of John F. Kennedy shortly from the brilliant historian Theodore White, one of the many who will be with us. Get a comment or two from Arthur Schlesinger and others, but I'd like to know where you were 20 years ago today. Tom.
Marco, I was in fourth grade.
Where? Yeah.
In a Catholic school in Milwaukee.
What did they tell you about it?
Well, initially they came over loudspeaker that there had been a shooting, and we didn't know for sure what had happened, and there was almost a false hope that maybe he wasn't hit, maybe There was no problem at all.
Did they send you home?
No, we didn't go home, but the final word did come through over loudspeaker, and when it did, the nun openly wept before it. And when I got home, I found my mother standing by the window with tears coming down her eyes, and for several days after that, she sobbed considerably. It was a very profound and traumatic event in my life, and I'll never forget it.
It's the first time I think that many kids saw their parents crying. Never thought of it that way, but it is true.
You're right. You're right. I didn't realize the impact that the assassination of a president had, especially President Kennedy, who, of course, fought considerably a battle against his religious beliefs. So it made an impression, Michael. Very deep one.
Thank you very much indeed for sharing that.
Thank you.
All right. I asked the brilliant historian Arthur Schlesinger, how would you, sir, Professor, how would you rate John F. Kennedy as a president?
I think he certainly was a great man. One of the problems about rating him as a president is the brevity of his administration. You know, it's as if Abraham Lincoln had died before the Battle of Gettysburg, or Franklin D. Roosevelt had died early 1935. It just isn't. Harry Truman had died before the Marshall Plan. I think that he certainly would have been one of our greatest presidents had he lived.
Was he on the road to withdrawal from Southeast Asia?
I find it very hard to suppose that President Kennedy would have Americanized the war as President Johnson did in 1965, when for the first time he sent regular combat units to South Vietnam and sent the Air Force over North Vietnam. One must remember, it's hard to think, because the Vietnam War was not a major issue in the Kennedy presidency. During the whole 1,000 days, the total number of Americans who were killed in combat in Vietnam were in the 73, and it was a much minor thing. It became a major thing 15 months after President Kennedy's death. And I think he'd been in Indochina when the French were there. I think he had a very strong feeling about the limits beyond which you could introduce white non-Asian troops without rousing all the forces of nationalism against the intruder. He said in one of his last public statements on South Vietnam that it is their war, the people of South Vietnam, they have to win it or lose it. And I think that's the way he felt.
That's Arthur Schlesinger, a little of a conversation from my own archives soon after the death. I'm Michael Jackson. Lana, where were you when it happened 20 years ago?
I was in New York City, my hometown. I was 21 years old. I was watching television with my mother and my brother when the news came over that he was shot, and then shortly after that he was dead. I remember needing to get out of the house and see people, see the reactions, share my grief with somebody. I remember going down the elevator of the apartment building and going out into the streets of Manhattan. And the first person I saw was a big, burly New York cop with tears streaming down his face. And we looked at each other, and I went over to him and I took his hands. And we just stared at each other for a couple of minutes and shared our moment of grief. And it made quite an impact on me. I remember turning around and there were more people crying on the streets, just openly crying. And I remember that entire week afterwards, if people weren't crowded around the television set, if they were out, for instance, in a restaurant somewhere, you could hear a pin drop. People were so reverent and quiet. It was a time of great sadness that I will never forget it.
Thank you for sharing that, Lana.
Thank you.
Thank you. How about you, Jane?
I was at home. I was expecting my first child, so I had quit work. And I was watching a soap. And, the bulletin came on, and I thought, good Lord, what are they going to do, mess up my soap opera, you know?
Yeah.
And then they came on and said that the president had been shot. So I immediately got up and called my husband, who was at work. And he said, he couldn't believe it. And he said, as soon as I hung up, all the phones in the office started ringing.
Funny, I was watching television, too.
That's what I want to know. What were you doing?
You want to know?
Yeah.
Well, I got up to watch myself in an NBC television show called Your First Impression. I was on the panel. The show never came on.
Did it ever, ever come on?
Oh, I hope not. Thanks for sharing that.
WXYZ Detroit.
From News Talk Radio 1270 WXYZ News, I'm Mike O'Neill. The West Germans have said yes, the first missiles may arrive on German soil tomorrow. Following 2 days of debate, the parliament in Bonn late today giving the okay for the NATO deployment of U.S. intermediate-range nuclear missiles. The Soviets have threatened to leave the arms talks once those new missiles are placed in Europe. President Reagan says he doesn't think the Soviets will do that, though, at least not for long. In Oakland County, the turnout of voters increased some late today, but it will still be a relatively small plurality who will decide whether State Senator Philip Mastin retains his legislative seat. Probably about one out of five registered voters will have gone to the polls by closing time an hour and a half from now. The man who sent officers on the TV show Hill Street Blues on their way with the admonition, "Let's be careful out there," the man who played Sergeant Esterhaus in the TV series, is dead. Michael Conrad won two Emmys for his portrayal but lost a battle with cancer. Michael Conrad was 58.
A little bit of road clutter on the Ford. This Metro Traffic Report brought to you by USA Today. Watch out for a piece of debris. It's in the right lane of eastbound 94 between Bobien and Russell. If you're traveling downtown this evening, keep your eyes out for a stall out in the right lane westbound Congress at Bobien. And right lane construction continuing on southbound Hoover, south of 11 Mile Road.
Newsline, Sportsline, Moneyline, Lifeline. Every day, USA Today's four colorful sections give you a quick look at all the nation's top stories. Pick it up now for 25 cents.